This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsMap Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, good morning. Good Monday to you. Thanks for joining us. It is SportsMap Radio. All right, we're going to get into the PGA Championship and the win for Justin Thomas at Southern Hills. We're going to talk about Thomas. We'll talk about Will Zalatoris. We'll talk about Mito Pereira. We will talk about Matt Fitzpatrick, but we'll also talk about Tiger Woods, who withdrew after Saturday's round after making the cut on Friday. I know a lot of people were criticizing the coverage of Tiger Woods on Twitter. I saw a bunch of it over the weekend. It was a little bit too much, right? A little, following his shot on Saturday when he was really struggling. But Tiger still moves the needle in golf, and there's no question about that. That whether he is trying to play recovering from that car accident or even before the accident when he was basically coming back from all of the other ailments that have plagued his career, Tiger still is just an unbelievable force when it comes to the game of golf. But the reality of it is that there are people who like golf just because of him, and they want to know more about what he's doing, whether he's up, whether he's down, whether he's in between. Watching him hit golf shots, whether they're good golf shots or bad golf shots, some people, that's all they just want to see. They don't really care about Justin Thomas, from Will Zalatoris to Tommy Fleetwood to Rory McIlroy. They couldn't care less. Tiger is the main reason that they tune in to a golf tournament, and the media capitalizes that. But we will get into the playoff victory of Justin Thomas. We're going to get into Golden State. They are one win away from going back to the NBA Finals and continuing. They've been around since 2015, and they had this lull. And there's been a couple of different, versions of this Golden State basketball team. And this might be, if they can close it out with the championship, and I don't know, whoever comes out of the East is going to be a tough opponent for them. This might be one of the better championship runs for a team in terms of having championships in the past and then finding themselves again. This Golden State team is just taking it to Dallas, and there's nothing wrong with that. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Mavericks because they have a megastar in Luka Doncic, but that's just about it. And how Dallas looks in this series against Golden State and what the future could hold. Because I don't think all is lost per se down the road for what Jason Kidd has in Big D. We'll talk about that coming up. It's Tony D, Ron Culver. It's Wake Up Call, getting you Monday started on SportsMap Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
And a good morning to you. Thanks for joining us, SportsMap Radio. All right, so Golden State, a win away, just a matter of time before they're off to another NBA Finals. First since 2019, and it would be their, it would be their sixth. They've won three. They lost to the Cleveland Cavaliers, and they lost to Toronto. God, that's a lot of finals appearances out of a really tough Western Conference. Why didn't I process this before? That's a lot of finals appearances.
We don't give them enough credit.
That's 6 in 8 years, right?
Yeah.
That's remarkable.
Yeah, we don't give them enough credit.
No, absolutely.
And, you say 6 of 8 years, but even though the Lakers won in the bubble, do we count that?
Yeah,
hard to say, Warriors, you didn't make it.
Yeah, but
you're in the bubble.
Yeah, and that year they were banged up still and hurt, so I don't think if we had a non-COVID year, I don't think they would have gone to the finals anyway. But, oh, God, that's incredible. And yet, they won a finals. They won a finals without Kevin Durant. Then they lost one, and then Kevin Durant was like, I'm going to join that team. Then they won two, then they lost one to Toronto, and then Kevin Durant left, and then they sort of got hurt and disappeared for a little bit, and now they're a game back from being right back in it again. Right? And look,
I'm gonna make this clear, because if you've listened to the show a long time, you know I drank the Mavericks Kool-Aid a little bit. I really did. I liked them during the regular season. I liked the way they played, but it's clear they don't have a team that's capable of beating Golden State, right? It didn't take three games to determine that. What was it? Friday night, you could tell that they just weren't. They played really well Friday night and still came up short. Right? They just don't have the team. But that's okay, because some teams in the NBA that have gone on to do some pretty good things have had a team like this where they have one star and they just can't seem to find a way to put it together, right? They can't seem to find additional pieces, and then eventually they find the pieces, or at least if you're a Mavericks fan, you hope they find the pieces and make a run. Luka Doncic is that good of a superstar that if they can find the right players around him that can contribute, then this will be a force. This team will be a force in the Western Conference. Right now, that's not the case. He scored 40 points, but Andrew Wiggins is doing a really good job of keeping him in check. I mean, he's earning every single thing he's got on that court. That's it. I mean, remember Andrew Wiggins was a number one overall pick, right, by Cleveland. And they traded him for Kevin Love, in a package for Kevin Love, right? Remember when LeBron wanted Kevin Love, and then they traded Wiggins to Minnesota, and he was Rookie of the Year, and then he went to Golden State. And now he's not even like their fourth best player on the team. And they don't need him to be, right? He does a good job defensively. He kind of bogs Luka down a little bit. He dunks on Luka, for crying out loud. This is a guy that, you know, knows what he's supposed to do in this series, and yet has a lot of credentials. I mean, all-star, rookie of the year, number one overall pick. And again, what option is he on this loaded Golden State team? Fifth? Right? I mean, behind Steph, Clay, Draymond, and Jordan Poole, it's a loaded, they're going up against a loaded team, and Dallas is not loaded. That's it. Spencer Dinwiddie was really the only guy that contributed to the Mavericks last night, with 26 points coming off the bench. Everybody else, I mean, Reggie Bullock was like 0 for 10 from the floor, 0 for 7 from the three-point line. Maxi Kleber didn't add very much. Jalen Brunson had 20. A lot of Luka's 40 points came in a time where Golden State was up by a lot, right? He only had 3 assists. Right? When your big man, you know, not your big man, but your top guy can't get any help, he has 3 assists. That's it. Now, he made a good point. I hate to say this, because I don't want to put thoughts in their head, right? I don't want to speak for them. But it just felt to me that after the game last night, listening to the post game, because I was driving to the airport to pick up my wife, so I was listening to some comments Jason Kidd had and Luka Doncic had on the radio. And Doncic, I don't want to say defeatist. That sounds like a really harsh term. But there was like a feeling like he was pointing out his age and how much, you know, the team is still learning, how much the team is still growing. Same with Jason Kidd. I mean, Jason Kidd talked about that series in Phoenix. You know, there's a lot to build on. It's not, like, there was a feeling like the series was over. And again, I'm not putting thoughts in their head. They've still got, you know, no one's ever come down from from a 3-0 deficit. But even they are seeing the writing on the wall, right? I mean, Kidd said, quote, "This is just the beginning of this journey." That's something you say when the series is over. Like, that's when you're eliminated in 4 games, 5 games, you say, "This is just the beginning of this journey." Right? It's over. We're going to move on, but this is now just the beginning. Quote, "I know you guys had us winning the championship before the season started, and that's a joke if you didn't get it. But this is a lot bigger than just one game or one series. This is huge for our franchise because none of you guys had us here. You guys were supposed to all be on vacation." Okay. I mean, again, I can take this quote and I can copy it and I can paste it to the article that describes the Mavericks' elimination from the postseason. That to me sounds a little defeatist. Again, no one's expecting them to come back in this series. I think there is a lot to grow on with this Mavericks team, but they're just not right. They're not capable. Miami and Boston, I don't even know how to predict that series anymore. That series is a mess in terms of predicting. You think Miami wins game one with an incredible performance by Jimmy Butler, Celtics kind of melt down in the third quarter where they don't even show up, and Miami just rolls and steamrolls them through. But then in game two, the Celtics come right back, win on the road, get the split, boom. They got control of this series. Bam, Adebayo, is he going to be able to run this team? You know, Jimmy Butler is dealing with a knee injury. Boom, game three in Boston, Miami comes right back and wins that. I have no idea where that's going. But we all kind of figured this was out with Golden State. They're too loaded of a basketball team. And Jason Kidd knows it. Luka Doncic knows it. Everybody on that team knows. Mark Cuban knows it. But again, and don't get me wrong here, because I know some of you will say, you're comparing him to Michael Jordan? How dare you? I'm not comparing him to Michael Jordan. But this reminds me of Michael Jordan and the Bulls teams in the 80s, the early 80s, right? Like, really good basketball player. Nothing else around him. Like, 63 against the Celtics and lost. You know, we all know about that story. But just a team that was like in the playoffs, around, you could feel like something was brewing there. Got to find the right pieces, Scottie Pippen and all these other, you know, here comes the pieces, and then they go on to win. That could happen to Dallas, where you've got a team that, you know, that went to the Western Conference Finals. They're not as good as Golden State. Everyone can see it. They've got a star player. They've got a superstar level talent. They got to pair him with the right player. They didn't want it. They did not want it to be Kristaps Porzingis. Fine. They shredded that contract, shipped him out of town. Great. Now they've got to figure out, though, what they're going to do. Who are they going to get? Who are they going to pair him up with? Zach LaVine? I don't know. Who knows? But they're going to have to pair him up with another level, next level player. A guy that can take the burden off of him. That's the way it works in this league. I mean, you know what? You want to know a better one? Okay, a better one would be LeBron and the Cleveland Cavaliers of 2007, right? I mean, how many times have we said over and over again, LeBron dragged that team kicking and screaming to the NBA Finals? That team had no business being in the NBA Finals outside of LeBron, right? Nothing else around him, and got swept by the Spurs. And that's when LeBron realized, okay, I'm going to keep going at this, but eventually I got to figure out what I'm going to do. Either they're going to get me help or I'm going to go find help. And a couple of years later, he made the decision to go to Miami. Dallas has to come to that same realization that this is a young team. Again, Luka's only 23. He's got a lot of years ahead of him, hopefully, with the barring major injuries. He's got a lot of years ahead of him. You don't want to waste this. You want to get him some players and let this team be a force. We are looking at the Golden State Warriors. And look what they built, right? Got their core three and Draymond and Klay and Steph Curry. They added Kevin Durant. That was awesome. But now they're showing they can get to the finals without Durant, with Durant, no matter. Get them healthy. Get them all back. And they're the force in the Western Conference. Dallas wants to be that, but they're not there yet because the players that are on that team, and they're good players, Spencer Dinwiddie, Maxi Kleber, Jalen Brunson, they're all good players. Reggie Bullock, they're good players. But they're not next-level superstar players, and they need to find that one guy. It's a little lower than Doncic on the superstar scale, but not far down. And they got to find that, because that's clear in this series what they need. Right? It's like it was evident on Friday. I mean, Friday I thought they played great. It wasn't good enough. It wasn't good enough. So, all right, we'll get to the PGA Championship. Justin Thomas, the winner. Wild day at Southern Hills. But it was a wild weekend as well. If you had a chance to watch Saturday's round and the rain and the cold and the wind, winter hats were being brought out, jackets, cold front moved in, nasty weather, and Tiger Woods took the brunt of that, withdrawing after round three on Saturday. We'll talk about that as we getting your weekend all together here on a Monday on Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue this Wake Up Call Sports Map Radio. All right, so PGA Championship. Man, there was a lot of stuff going on this weekend. So you had the NBA, you had the NHL, Major League Baseball, of course, PGA Championship. The Preakness was ran, in case anybody saw that. I can't remember the
Preakness
name of
the horse.
Yeah, it was ran on Saturday. I forget who won, Easy Money or something.
Something like that. I saw
something
that too.
Something like that, yeah. Anyway, Epicenter didn't win. That was the horse I thought was going to win. But
he's having a bad run, or she.
I know. All, you know, favorite for the Derby and all that. And I, two legs of the Triple Crown already in, did not win. So, yeah, it was kind of a busy weekend. But the PGA Championship garnered a lot of my attention because it was the second major of the year. Saturday's weather was terrible. Rain, wind, cold. And can I just say this? I say this all the time, and I'll be saying this until I'm done doing radio. Every time there's bad weather and the conditions are awful, and I hear professional golfers complain, I just it goes in one ear and out the other. It's like, shut up. It's your job to play golf in all conditions. Mother Nature doesn't always comply. This is why if you've ever been around a touring professional or known a touring professional, when they're home and it's rainy and windy, they will go to the driving range. They will play at their home course because they have to get acclimated to the weather of any situation. They're not shutting down a tournament because rain happens to fall and it's not debilitating to the course. They will obviously shut down a golf if it's pouring and whatnot. They'll stop and they'll move on. But if it's just sprinkling and it's not bad, they'll play. You got to play. If it's not raining and it's cold and windy, you're playing golf. That's the way it is. Learn to play with it. So they were talking about the conditions. Guys hated the setup and the course and whatnot. And Tiger went out there, shot 79. And afterwards, he withdrew from the tournament. Now, if you remember earlier in this week, late last week, we said after Tiger opened up the PGA with a +4, and I said, I don't know about this. Like, it looked like he was in a lot of pain. He looked like he was wincing. It wasn't an excuse. Like, you hear guys talk about, yeah, I was in, some pain. And you're like, what pain? Like, I watched you for 18 holes. It didn't look like you were in pain at all. That was not the case with Tiger. When he was done with his round on Thursday, and he talked about walking around and being in pain, you could tell. If you watched him, he was in pain. I mean, he winced. He looked like he was in pain. So I was like, don't aggravate it even more. You know, you're +4. You're not going to win this thing. Don't continue playing on it. Like, you want to go to Brookline next month. You want to go to St. Andrews in July. I mean, St. Andrews, for the love of Pete. You want to go there. Don't put yourself in a position where you're hurting the injury more. And you're really going to be out. But what I didn't really put in my equation was that Tiger wasn't trying to win the golf tournament. And Tiger went out Friday not trying to get back into contention. Tiger went out there Friday to make the cut. And that's what he wanted. He just wanted to make the cut. Because there was a lot of good golfers who didn't make the cut. And I think Tiger, wincing in pain, he felt like, if I can get another 18 holes in here and really grind this out. And he did. Shot 69. Shot 1 under par. Made the cut at +3. And I think on Saturday, with the weather and the wind and, again, colder temperatures and a little bit of moisture, the ball didn't really strike it particularly well. I think he went, you know what? I've made my point. I made the cut, but this is agonizing. I'm not hitting the ball well, and I'm not doing this for another 18 holes. So I'm out. And I think that was the right move for him. I think it was the right call. But I think, again, think about Friday's round where he gutted out the -1, 69 total to get to 3 over to make the cut. Think about the narrative that happened on Saturday. Because, and again, I'm not saying Tiger manipulated all this to get the favorable coverage. I don't know if he cares at this point in his life what people are saying to him on social media and whatnot. But I do think there was an overall appreciation for Tiger rather than sympathy for Tiger. Like, that round he shot on Saturday was a disaster. He made 5 straight bogeys. He had never done that in a major championship before. And he just was out of sync. And it wasn't unplayable conditions. He wasn't playing in a monsoon and a hailstorm and a tornado. It was very windy, yes, but it wasn't, it wasn't ridiculous. It wasn't like he, everyone's going to shoot 85. he misplayed shots. He didn't hit the ball very well. But instead of people saying, oh, look at this once great icon of sports out there making bogeys. No, people weren't saying that. What people were saying was, my God, that guy on that leg gutted it out and made a cut at a tournament when look at the golfers that didn't make the cut. Go back to the Masters in April. In fact, Tiger actually kind of teased Jordan Spieth about this at the PGA because they were paired up in the first round with Rory McIlroy. Jordan Spieth didn't make the cut at Augusta. He went in as one of the favorites, right? Because he knows Augusta really well, plays Augusta really well. Tiger wasn't a favorite at Augusta. And yet Tiger made the cut and Jordan Spieth didn't make the cut. Right? So I think that is what Tiger was trying to prove was, listen, I'm not winning this thing, but I'm not going out a guy that needs your sympathy. I'm not going out on Friday plus 19, right? That you see some of these guys do. No, I'm going to grind. It's going to really hurt, but I'm going to tolerate the pain. And then I'm going to get into Saturday, see what happens. And then I got to get out of this thing. And good. And it was good for him. I didn't need to see a Sunday round of Tiger Woods walking around with a hurt leg, shooting another 78 or 79, or whatever he would have shot on Sunday. No, not interested in that. So that was the other takeaway. We'll get more into this PGA, but I want to say that Justin Thomas came out. He was 2 under when the day started. Now, Mito Pereira was at 9 under. And so Justin Thomas overcame a 7-shot lead. A lot of it because he shot 67. A lot of it because Pereira came back down to earth a bit. There was a lot of movement on the leaderboard. There were some guys tied for the lead. Then they weren't tied for the lead. There were a lot of birdies and bogeys. And there was a lot of action on the back nine. It was a very exciting tournament from the standpoint that every hole was delivering some sort of either major reward or some sort of disaster. And Southern Hills has been hosting major championships for a very, very long time. I thought the course was great, and I there was one particular thing that I liked about Southern Hills, and I really, really wish a lot more golf clubs would do it. There was one other thing I didn't like about Southern Hills, and I wish a lot of golf courses and major championships would do away with it. So Southern Hills had both a very good hole and a not-so-good hole. The 17th at Southern Hills was a just over 300-yard par 4. Now, that is a 4-wood, 3-wood, depending on the wind, for these guys to try to reach the green. I thought 17 was the best theater of the tournament yesterday. It's a short par 4. It was tricky enough that, you know, guys were trying to hit it on the green and could reach the green with a 3-wood. They were playing it like a par 3, but it was still tough enough that a par was not a good score. You could make eagle there if you had the right shot. You could make birdie there if you had the right shot. But par also was in play. There were bunkers that were strategically located. This is what, when we talk about these golf courses needing to go to 8,000 yards on the next level, like, that's not what you have to do. Take a short par 4. Put a drivable par 4 on in every major if you can. If your design allows it, put a drivable par 4 on every hole. It is great theater. It is great fun. Guys are going for it. Some even lay up because it's a little too dangerous to be in the bunker or off to the, you know, side hill, downhill lies. It can be off the green. It's better than a 660-yard par 5. But the other one that they had was, that Southern Hills had, was they had a 255-yard par 3. I don't need to see guys taking long irons and hybrids out to try to reach a par 3. You want to trick up a par 3? Make the green the size of a postage stamp and put bunkers all around it and make it 130 yards. See what happens then. Mix in some weather. You know, guys flying all over the place, like the hole at Troon, which is called postage stamp, by the way. You don't have to go long all the time. Sometimes these short holes with danger around them are really, really good theater. And those that 17 was fantastic. All right, more on Justin Thomas with the major wins. We'll get back to the NBA. So we continue with Wake Up Call.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks for joining us on Twitter at Tony D Radio at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. Good Monday to you. So this weekend is Memorial Day weekend?
Yes.
We're already there, huh?
Already there.
Gosh, it's flying by. My goodness, we'll be in June. You know what I was telling my wife over the other day before she left for the trip? I said, you realize that, like, we'll be done with May, and then we got a vacation in June and a couple of other things. And I said, and, you know, when we get through that, like, when we go on vacation, we come back from vacation, it'll be near the end of June, we'll wrap that up. We'll be in July, and then you and I will be starting NFL previews.
Yeah.
Like, it's coming up that fast. We'll be in NFL super mode in a couple of weeks.
Like just like normal, we'll be talking about the Nathan's Hot Dog Contest and then turning right around and going, hey, let's talk about these Falcons.
Start breaking down every team like we do every year.
Do the Browns have a quarterback yet?
Yeah. Right? Can't wait for that story.
We might have to visit that story maybe once a week.
Is Dan Snyder still going to be the owner of the Commanders?
That's another one.
Owner's got their target set on him. Tell you. So yeah, I mean it's coming quick. So I mean maybe it's because I'm getting older and time is, you know, clicks by as you get older, but man, long drought. But feels like it's gone pretty fast. So again, Justin Thomas wins the PGA yesterday, and listen, Mito Pereira would have been a great story. He's a PGA Tour rookie, 27 years old, out of Chile. It would have been the first Chilean golfer to win a major championship, had a comfortable lead. Will Zalatoris would have been a great story. He's considered one of the best ball strikers in golf. If anybody else had come up and won that thing, Tommy Fleetwood, Matthew Fitzpatrick, Rory McIlroy, of course, again, would have been a good story. But Justin Thomas is a great story. Justin Thomas, I hate saying this because I think that it's like Super Bowls, right? We talk about this with Aaron Rodgers a lot, right? We know Aaron Rodgers is going down as one of the greatest quarterbacks in NFL history. But if he doesn't win another Super Bowl, there's a little like stain there. It's like one is good, really good. And we'll never take that away from you. But if you want to be on that upper echelon, you got to get at least two, right? And it's unfair completely. I mean, Dan Marino got zero. But it's just kind of the way we do it. And it really doesn't really make much sense. I mean, if you're a Super Bowl champion, you're a Super Bowl champion, but for some weird reason, we feel like you need two. And we do this with golfers as well. There is a whole bunch of golfers who have won a major championship and that's it. Their moment in the sun. And then that's all, you never hear from them again. You know, sort of the Sean McKeels of the world, the Wayne Grady's of the world, the Michael Campbell's of the world, where they come up, you know, the Trevor Immelman's of the world, they win a major and you never hear from them again. Or you hear from them every now and then, but they don't win a major. They had their golf game and the golf gods all lined up perfectly for the 1 week that they were playing. And whether it was luck or skill or circumstances, whatever it may be, whatever it was, they put on the jacket or hoisted the claret jug or whatever it is, and then that's it. And Justin Thomas did that in 2017 at Quail Hollow. He won the PGA Championship. But no one ever looked at Justin Thomas as a one-hit wonder. People looked at Justin Thomas as a legitimate star in the game of golf. When we talk about the young golfing talent that is out there, Jordan Spieth, right, Rory McIlroy, we bring up Justin Thomas. We mention Justin Thomas. Even though he has one major, Jordan Spieth has three, Rory McIlroy has four, four. And with Thomas, he has that one, and that one should be good enough. But in the world of golf, it isn't good enough, and so he gets the second one, and he does so by getting into a playoff with Will Zalatoris that was set up only because Mito Pereira, who I told you earlier, the Chilean golfer, made a double bogey on the 18th hole. So Justin Thomas fired a 67. He was in the clubhouse at 5 under par. Zalatoris parred the 18th hole, and a gutsy par it was. And he got in at 5 under par. And at that moment, Justin Thomas was going over to the driving range, even though Pereira had a one-shot lead, because he figured, well, if the guy makes bogey, I better be ready for the playoff. And if he makes par and wins this thing, all right, no harm done hitting a couple of shots, keeping warm. So Zalatoris and him were both at 5 under par, and Pereira was on the tee at 18 at 6 under. Par wins it, bogey ties it, and we go to a three-hole playoff. Pereira's on the tee, and he hits one of the – he has one of the worst swings I have ever seen under major championship golf pressure. I mean, this swing was – he came through the ball, and instead of going to that you know, sort of higher finish, he cuts it across his body and falls down. It was described by one as if he had been electrocuted on the tee after he hit the ball. Like, as soon as he hit the ball, he got a wave of electricity running through his body and just sort of, It was atrocious. And that thing was heading way right, which, by the way, on that particular hole at 18 at Southern Hills, there's water on the right. And guess what he found? That ball could have landed all sorts of places, but it landed in the water. So now he's dropping three. Still can get into the playoff. Hitting his third shot. As he sits his third shot, he would just need two shots to get into the playoffs. So it's still manageable. Get it up there near the green. Get your two chip and putt or two putt. Get in at minus five. No. He overcooks the green. Then his chip rolls off the green. Has to putt it off the green and misses and makes a double bogey. Phil Mickelson made a double bogey in 2006. Colin Montgomery also in 2006, I think, made double bogey, and Jeff Ogilvie won the U.S. Open that year. Jean Vandeveld had a three-shot lead and lost the British Open, so it wasn't, you know, as bad as that. But this was a bad, bad hole. I mean, it's not going to go down as one of the greatest chokes, but man, I fell for the guy. Now, afterwards, he spoke to Amanda Renner, who used to be Amanda Baliones. CBS's sort of sideline reporter, if you will. And it was a good interview. Better than I would have done. I'll tell you that right now. I don't think I would have had if I melted down like that, I don't think I would have been able to handle an interview. Especially when I'm watching two guys on the, you know, getting ready off the practice tee and, you know, going ready, getting their golf carts to head over to the first playoff hole. I would have been like, my God, all I had to do was, did I have to hit driver off the tee? Why didn't somebody break it over their leg like Tin Cup? Like, you know, Cheech Marin did to Kevin Costner. Smash. Oh, you want to hit driver? Psh, smash it over his knee. Like, that's what his caddy should have done. He said, give me driver. No, I'm not giving you driver. Par wins this thing. Bogey gets us in a playoff. You're hitting 3-wood. What, are you insane? What, are you crazy? What, are you hitting driver? You nuts? No.
That's it's the only driving. Problem. That's when you know Hollywood's Hollywood.
Yeah, I know, right?
Because that, I mean, you're absolutely right. Keep that club in the
nobody
bag.
Nobody does this. Nobody does this. You know, here's the thing. As I have learned and grown playing golf, and I was on the golf team when I was in high school and played at a couple of tournaments when I was younger, and then it's sort of like the game just kind of left me as I became an adult. But I got a little older. As I learned more and more, I would hear pros talk about the mental side of the game, right? I remember talking to a lot of different pros about it. They're like, no, man, you amateurs, you know, you always take driver out. We analyze all the course. Like, we think, why take driver when you can hit 3-wood here and take this out of play? And then every time they get to a moment like this where they're on the tee at the 18th hole and they have a lead, and sometimes a comfortable lead, what stick do they bring out of the bag? The driver. Phil Mickelson did it at Wingfoot. Jean Vandeveld did it at Carnoutsie. Like, this guy did it here. Like I don't understand. What you going to fire your caddy on the spot because he cracks your driver over his knee and bends it on the last hole for your own good? Like, I'll go back to 99, the British Open at 99. You want to watch a funny video? Google Jean Vandeveld, Carnoutsie, 99. It's, you want to reach in and grab the guy by the shoulders and go, what the hell are you doing? This guy makes mistake after mistake after mistake. He has a three-shot lead. Three-shot lead. A professional golfer has a three-shot lead with one hole to go, right? let me just put that in perspective. A triple bogey puts him in a playoff. A double bogey still wins the claret jug. So they're engraving his name into the jug while he's on the tee. So it'll be ready to present. And he hits driver and it goes over to the other fairway. And then he hits from the other fairway into the burn and the water. He thinks he's going to hit it out of the water. He doesn't. He takes a drop. It's in the heather, splashes it out to the other heather, goes into the bunker, splashes out of the bunker, putts out for 7, makes a playoff, loses the playoff, right? When he could have hit 7-iron 3 times. And no, 7-iron twice and pitching wedge and made it. This guy could have done the same thing. This guy could have hit hybrid off the tee and still won this thing. Like for real. It was don't get me wrong, it's a long par 4, but again, driver with water on the right? It's like a magnet in pressure situations. Phil did the same thing too. Phil needed a bogey to get into a playoff. Par would have won the U.S. Open. Takes driver out, puts it in a hospitality tent. It's like, what are you doing? And so that set up the playoff between Zalatoris and Thomas. And it's a par 5. They're playing a par 5. And it's an aggregate score. So it's a total score. And Nick Faldo should have known better, but I think he was trying to make a point. He said this was like a match play. But it's not really a match play. If you're not familiar, if Ron and I are playing match play, for example, if Ron makes a 3, I make a 9, he only wins one hole. We don't go to the next hole with him having a 6-shot lead. We only go to the next hole with him having a 1-shot lead. Like if he made 3 and I made 4. So it doesn't matter what I make if I don't make 3. So if he makes 3, I can make 100. It doesn't matter. He just goes one up. If it's an aggregate 3-hole playoff and he makes a 3 and I make 100, he has a 97-shot lead on the second hole. That means he would have to find a way to make 100 and I need to make a 3 for us to be back to even. So Justin Thomas hit it in the rough on the par 5. Zalatoris hit it right down the middle. Zalatoris put his ball on the green with his second shot, punting for eagle. Thomas laid up and then hit a wedge to striking distance where he made birdie. Zalatoris two-putted for birdie. And then on the next hole, the 17th, that's where Thomas hit the shot of the tournament, where he took his 3-wood, hit a nice baby cut with the wind, landed it on the front part of the green, and it rolled up onto the green. Zalatoris, seeing that, wanting to match that, again, I understand what Nick Faldo was saying, mindset of match play mentality, but he got a little over-aggressive, overcooked it a bit, went over to the right. He made par. Justin Thomas made birdie. They both made par on the 18th, and Thomas was your champion. And that's how he won his second major. But it was thrilling and very entertaining to watch Pierre play that 18th hole and then Thomas brilliantly play the short drivable par 4. All right, we'll come back up, wrap up this hour. We got the good, the bad, and the dumb in hour number 2. Also get back to the NBA playoffs and Golden State up 3-0. And now we got game 4 between Boston and Miami. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue on Wake Up Call. All right, congratulations again, Justin Thomas. Oh, can I rant again on a thing I didn't like about the PGA Championship?
Of course.
I already said a 255-yard par 3. It's ridiculous. I don't really care about these guys hitting long iron shots into par 3s. Silly. But yesterday, I think it was on the 6th hole, Zalatoris hit his ball out of bounds or something. It went out of play, and it took 15 minutes for them to get a ruling and to figure out where to play the next shot. And this bothers me. And I might be the only one in the country that's bothered by this. And so forgive me, because I might be on an island here. But if you know the course, right? So the PGA, like, we're going to Southern Hills. Don't you think that they would say, by the way, guys, here's all the danger areas. And so everybody, this is what we'll be doing if these situations occur in these areas. Like, when Zalatoris hit his shot, they get there and they're like, okay, it crossed here. Let's get a ruling. And shouldn't there be a rules official going, yep, this is what happens. Your ball, you're going to take two drops from this point. Two things this way. Right? Doesn't that make more sense? Like, to me, 15 minutes to imagine if the NBA did that. Imagine if the NBA or Major League Baseball or the, oh, God forbid, the NFL. Imagine if the NFL took 15 minutes to tell you if a player was out of bounds right before the goal line or whatever ruling they were looking at. It could be a score, could be a fumble. If it took 15 minutes to make that determination, we'd all be like, I know you want to get it right, but for the love of Pete, 15 minutes? A quarter of an hour? Before you tell me what the ruling is? Like, Zalatoris should have gotten there and already driver in hand going, I get two lengths of this, right? Yep, from right here. Great. Boom, boom, done. Hit the shot. What are they talking about? Recipes? How their kids did in school? What new car model out there is worthy of driving and getting good gas mileage? What are they talking about? 15 minutes to determine a drop at a major championship? Unacceptable.